This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, this is RÚV English Radio. My name is Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today. I have come to a protected building, part of the National Museum of Iceland, in a beautiful location, a wonderful sight from the road. If you've passed it, you've missed out, you should turn round and come back to Glombaya, to the turf house here. My guest today, my guide, is Berglind. Hi.
Hello. This is a very old turf farm. We've had people living in Glombaya from the settlement, and it's you might know Guðríður Þorbjarnardóttir from the Vínland saga. She settled here after she moved from Greenland with Þorfinnur Karlsefni and her son Snorri Þorfinnsson.
And that's a statue, isn't it? The church behind us.
That's a statue over there. And we've also made some archaeological survey, and we have some archaeology here, not visible, but we know it's here, a large longhouse. So people did live here, and Glombaya has been here, the turf farm has been here for centuries. But this is probably because turf is it has to be fixed all the time, and it's that sort of building material.
And so it needs to be maintained, because you might think it you know, renews itself, looks after itself, but no.
No, it has to be kept quite well, because the turf walls they get pressed down, and you have to rebuild it, and so the farms in general, they were changing through the centuries. And this farm has this mainly from the 18th and the 19th century, as it looks today. This was a priest manor, so this is not a typical. The typical Icelander didn't live this way.
No,
this is like a manor, if you will. People were rich who lived here.
So was this considered one dwelling then, one home, one family, or is this a small town or village that we're looking at? How did it work?
It would have been the priest and his family, and also some workers.
Okay.
So it would have been between 15 or 20 people who lived in this farm. And the turf farms in the past, they evolved, it used to be a one building, the longhouses. And then they added some more buildings that were connected by a corridor mainly. And so they lived in maybe one building, and then the corridors are connected by different buildings that were, made for cooking, the kitchen, for storing food, and for making food. So and this one is quite large. It's actually also has a lot of turf. It's probably one of the most turf of the buildings in Iceland, because that's the building materials we have. As you can see around us, there's no stones.
And there's a lot of turf.
It's a lot of turf.
Yeah. Well, I'm intrigued by how well this material insulates. Today is, I think it's a pretty warm day. It's about 18, 19 degrees. There's barely a cloud in the sky, and it's very, very sunny, and it feels very warm. Obviously, I guess in Iceland, these buildings were designed to keep heat in. But can they keep heat out?
They were probably not trying to.
No.
But that is the how the turf works. The walls are very big. They might be 2 meters thick. And the insulation is that great, you don't even have phone reception in here.
Well, let's try that out then. A digital detox and a chance to cool down. Shall we wander into one of the
stores? Yes, absolutely. The main door is over there. These are the storages here. They will keep for farming, different sort of artifacts, and a smithy on the end over here. But this would be the main entrance. So this is not where the people who lived here would have walked in. They would go through the back door.
Okay.
This is where the guests. So since you're a guest,
I can go in. And how old then are these frontages, the painted wooden front?
These.
Because obviously these would not date to the original settlement of the area.
These are actually from the late 19th century. There was a priest here called Jón Hallsson. He made quite a bit of changes. So the gables you can see over here, they are from him. Because in the past, this would have been where the living quarters would have been, here in the front. But then it evolved, and they added this large corridor. And now these are just the parlor. Here's the parlor.
I'm always banging my head on low surfaces, so I'm going to be very careful as I walk through. Walk through here.
Be careful with your head and on your feet.
So this is an office space that we are in. There's an old gas lamp here. There are some books and an inkwell and spectacles on an old desk. There's a bureau to my left, and that I think is a harpsichord.
Yes, this one was in a church here in Glombaya. And we have many original artifacts in here. For example, this one is from this, what's it called?
It's a chandelier, yes, a golden chandelier.
This was also in the church. This is from about 1500, approximately.
My goodness.
So, yes, it's quite
it's beautiful. And, and I wouldn't have guessed it was, you know, 500 years old.
Yeah, exactly, honestly. This room was like an office for the priest, but it also served as a parlor at some point.
Yes.
So the reason why it's painted blue is because this was a wealthy home, so they would wanted to have a blue colored for the guests
I
to
see.
Show how much how rich they were.
On those blue walls, there are many, many, many small photographic portraits of various people. Almost all men. I can see a couple of women, but almost all men.
Good catch. There's only seven women.
Seven women. Who are these people?
These are people who worked for the municipality or for the community between 1850 and 1950. So it's like teachers, headmistresses, like school headmistresses, statespersons.
Yes. And these, I mean, these photographs must be from close to the beginning of photography.
You can see like some pictures have been like fixed and stuff like that.
You can really feel the history in this room, and lots of different types of history in this room, can't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a nice touch to have the people who like established the museum.
And it is cooler in here. Don't know whether my mobile phone is working, as you suggested it might not, but it's definitely cooler. So we'll step out of the guest room, which is the first room that
we came into. Well, this is actually the guest sleeping quarters, so this is also blue.
It is as blue as the last room that we were in, for sure. And I'm always struck when I come to places like this about how small the sleeping areas are, how small the beds are sometimes.
Yeah, that's actually a structural point, because in the Balstova, which was the main living quarters, it's the space between the beams, they had to be that way. And in the past, people slept sitting. They just had sort of sitting. They had like a large pillow, and we actually have a saying in Icelandic, because people kept their things underneath themselves. So if someone was sleeping quite high, they had a lot of things.
All right, it's just like being on a flight then.
Trying
to get some sleep if you're not in business class, I suppose. But no, it is striking. I didn't know the reason for that, but I just assumed that people were shorter in those days. But
And also in the Balstov, you can see there people slept two and two together in a bed. Usually a grown-up and a child, and then women on one side and men on the other side.
So we'll step back out into the corridor. At Loivas, near Akureyri, there's another turf house which is of a similar design. It has the very long corridors linking all the rooms.
That's how the turf farms evolved.
Mm.
And this people lived in this turf house until 1947. And that's when the last people moved out. That's when the National Museum received this building.
Mm-hmm.
And the year after, in 1948, is the year where the Skagafjörður Heritage Museum, which takes care of this farm, was established to have exhibitions in this building and take care of it also, as well.
1947 feels quite recent to still be living in a building like this.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not even the latest of when people moved out of Turf House. We have the most recent one I know of, it was in 1992. There was an elderly woman who lived in a turf farm quite close by. And
Can you run plumbing and electricity into a building that is made like this?
Because people lived, they also just, maybe made an extension.
Yeah.
We have examples of it here in Skagafjörður. We have turf houses where they made a concrete house, maybe with a corridor, and it looked sort of, the design of it was sort of the same, but they still use the turf house. So we, for example, have electricity just in one room, but in more recent houses, they would have added the comfortables, they need it.
Because we're in quite deep now, and you can touch, and I'm not going to touch too much, it's okay, but you can touch and feel the turf right up close, and you can feel that it's quite cold. It is it is doing a job of insulating.
Yes, very much so. And this actually, this is a new wall, just made last month.
Okay.
Because this was getting a bit poorly, so we had to have it fixed. And we have like an expert here Helgi Sigurdsson at Fornverk. He's also a teacher at our Heritage Craft School here at the museum. He fixes the buildings for the National Museum.
Does the turf dry out or does it get very wet if it's raining a lot? Is that a problem?
Well, I think the main enemy of the turf is the wetness. So we want to have the roofs a bit thick so it takes in the moisture. Mm. But if it leaks, you know, in the walls, then we have problems.
Then you got a problem.
Okay. Yeah, because then they, you know, they start to get better, like worse and it needs fixing.
Two big spaces, one to my left, one to my right. A very low roof here.
Yeah. Be careful of your head.
I've got to be careful. I'm going to definitely bang my head at least once on this trip. It's guaranteed. It's baked in. Okay, in this room, these look like lots of cooking utensils. There are big pots hanging on chains from the ceiling. Is this the kitchen?
This is the kitchen, yes. So in the past, you would have entered here and would be smoke-filled. Of course, there is an opening over there, but it's closed now because it's not in use, of course. But this is quite an original building, and the hearth here.
And a really earthy smell in here as well, which is not surprising, I suppose.
Yeah, that's the turf. Mm. That's the magic of the turf houses. It has, like, you can really feel it, like, you can smell it, feel it sounds differently.
Yes.
It sort of hugs you.
Well, I'm wearing headphones as we have this conversation. I can hear that it does have a different quality to it, sound.
Yeah.
Do people then still, in 2025, use turf to at least put on the roofs of their buildings?
Well, in some modern architecture, they do. Mm. But of course, it's done differently with modern ways. But they do. That's probably the most the main aesthetic thing they've taken from this turf tradition.
Yes. Well, it's very beautiful, isn't it?
On an aesthetic
level, it is very pleasing to see, and you can see why someone might want to incorporate the design. I'm going to try not to bang my head once again. Yeah. So let's cross the corridor into the other room, the one that was on my left a few moments ago. This is a smaller room. There are two large wooden barrels and some shelving in here.
Yes, this is what we call the milk pantry. So this is it's temporarily been fixed, so missing the main artifacts, but we will add them soon. But this is where they would make the skyr and churn the butter and everything that has to do with milk.
And that would be the old-fashioned traditional skyr, not the modern version that
absolutely.
We get in the supermarket.
Yeah, that's true.
Have you ever tasted original skyr? I've not had a chance to yet. It's still possible to buy, I think, in some places.
Well, just the unsweetened ones, yes.
Yeah.
They're quite a different taste. Yes.
Well, if you're listening outside of Iceland and you've bought skyr wherever you are in the world, I mean, the versions that are sold are very nice, but they're not skyr, traditional skyr, are they?
No, they have much more sugar in it. And sweeteners that people in the past would not have had.
They taste nice enough, though, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, lots of visitors today, so we are squeezing past each other in the corridor here. We're having a conversation at the end of August, and it does seem pretty busy today.
Well, yeah, it's actually quite calm. Yeah, it's getting a little less, but we can be a bit busy sometimes, yeah.
So now we're in a room with lots of crockery and the smaller pantry.
Yes, this is what we call the North Pantry. This is where the mistress of the house would, get together, prepare the food. And people would, bring their own bowl. Everyone had their own wooden lidded bowl. And they would, get their food here, and then they would bring it to the Balstova and eat it there.
Mm-hmm. And what's surprising, I think, I mean, you said that a lot of people would have lived in this structure, but it does, despite the low ceilings, it does feel quite roomy, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are several buildings. It's 16 buildings in total.
Yeah.
Just connected together and,
And I wonder how life would have been many, many, many decades and centuries ago.
If you go into the long pantry.
Okay, so this is the long pantry, which is on the other side of the corridor, once again from the smaller one we've just been in. And again, some very large barrels of different sizes. What would have been stored in here?
All the food. You might feel it when you go inside. If you sort of walk down, and it's a bit cooler. That's how they, you know, made it, because they were going to store food, so they had to have the little cooler and a bit more even even temperature. And this is where they would have all the whey inside the barrels and put like meat in it and something to store for the winter, because they had to have food for about 20 people or something throughout the winter.
And that tradition continues, particularly in the month of Thori, doesn't it, when foods are pickled in whey and maybe not, you know, the nicest idea to eat them in 2025, but you can still get those whey pickled sour foods.
Yes, and fermented sharks.
Fermented shark is the obvious example, yes. There are other examples of using whey even now to preserve and pickle.
Yeah, I mean, all of these traditions are, you know, it shows that people were trying to find a way to make the food last through the winter.
Yeah.
Like making jam and stuff like that. That's just, you know, how to preserve the berries. And
well, as I say, a very warm day today. It feels like a warm day, but it's very fresh and cool in here. So this would have been a useful room to keep things fresh. Let's turn out of the large pantry and turn left. Deeper into the building here, into these buildings connected in one turf house. Let's go to the right. And this looks like a more modern part of the structure. There are wooden floors and ceilings here. An exhibition of the personal items that people would have had?
Yes. Oh, well, these are, from the region. This is like the room that we have, like the exhibition, for example, not like going into the living quarters. But this room is actually the most recent. It was in the late 19th century. And you probably noticed it was living quarters. That's why you walked upstairs, just to preserve the heat.
And so these items then that we see in this display case, there are coins and small pouches. There's a cup and some small glasses.
This is for bloodletting, for humans and for animals.
Oh, right. I had no idea what those were. So there's a very small golden item. It's about 4 centimeters long, I would say. Mm-hmm. It looks like a big tie clip, perhaps. And then on the right-hand side, there's a bigger version of the same thing. Oh, it looks a bit like a paper press or a paper punch that you would use to punch holes in sheets of paper. But neither of these things are for those purposes. These are for bloodletting.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, we have, different things to, you know, show, the old cultures. And this is a favorite one of mine.
This is the cup.
A moustache cup. So you wouldn't have like a mess on your... Or
I wondered what that was. So it's like a big teacup, a normal cup. Mm-hmm. But there is, as you say there is a China moustache guard on one side of the lip so you can safely drink without spoiling your moustache. You could always shave, I suppose. That's another way of dealing with the problem. Some shoes and footwear in this case.
Yeah, this is shoes made from fish skin and seal skin as well. Mm. So this is what people wore in the past. They would have mainly, of course, sheepskin, but these are other examples.
Fish skin's coming back into fashion, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. They also had these knitted... inside of the soles, just to keep warmer and a little softer, because it wouldn't have been comfortable to walk, stones or running after sheep in the fall.
But talking of keeping warm, here are some gloves and a scarf and some balls of wool. Again, you know, showing the importance of Icelandic wool in keeping people warm and keeping them dry too.
Yes, and they used everything. They used everything of the animal, and you can see here piece of bone they used for putting the thread on, and they would have decorated as well. You can see it's a little bit decorated.
Yeah, they are beautiful items. Knitting is something I know nothing about, I must admit, so I'm going to take your word for the fact that these were used to assist with knitting. And again, another case here showing some of the items that people would have had and really treasured, I think. Some beautiful jugs and crockery. Was it important to have these items on display? Did they tell people something about the owners?
Well, like I mentioned with the lidded bowls, everyone would have had their own bowl, and they would have taken very good care of it. And it was beautifully decorated because they were having it for life. And also we have also this basket here. Mm. It has quite a history. We have this famous, like a legend, outlaw in Iceland, Fjallaeyvindur. Have you heard of him?
Mountain
Eyvindur.
Yes. Yeah. From the mountains.
Yes, from the mountains. Well, he was accused of like stealing sheep, and he and his wife, they like escaped to the mountains. And he is supposed to have made this basket. They have like made a play about him. But he was supposed to be, you know, such a talented basket maker. Or I don't know what the proper English word for it is.
Basket weaver, maybe.
Basket weaver. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's not very big. We should say it's not. If you've got an image of a laundry basket in your mind, no, it's not that at all. It's maybe 10-12 centimeters tall.
Yeah, but he was that talented that it was supposed to, you know, hold water.
He could weave a basket so well it was literally watertight.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got some keys and other items in the case that we're looking at now. Are we getting into a more modern era as we move around? Because some of these look as if they've been machined.
Well, the theme is actually, it's artifacts that connects to women, actually.
Okay.
So the woman would have had the key, you know, keys in the farm and, you know, take care of all the food and everything. So it's artifacts that belong to women. And here we have like a carved out wooden plaque that would have, you know, to decorate a bread when they were baking. And has like the name Thora, which is quite a common Icelandic name.
And so this would have been owned by someone called Thora?
Yes, absolutely. She would be marking her breads.
Yes. And in this final case, we can see some items that have been crocheted, knitted?
Well, it's embroidery and crochet and knitting and, you know, different, you know, like fine needlework.
Mm-hmm. I know that the sewing machine has a particular importance in Icelandic history because it showed that people could make a bit of extra money if they were sewing for other people. But before the sewing machine was invented, before it came to Iceland, did that happen? Did people who had the skills, did they knit for other people? Did they embroider for other people? Did they make items for others?
Well, that's how actually Icelanders spent their evenings in the Baðstofa. Mm. They had to like knit a lot, and children had to knit a lot as well. They were taught and they had to, you know, everyone had to work in their hands. So that's a big part of, you know, everyone sat around.
Yes.
And they were knitting or weaving and someone was, in the meantime, you know, taking care of the entertainment.
So it wasn't a trade as such then, because everyone had to do it for themselves and their family.
It would have been, yeah. I think they would have sold some of it, and there are some exports and stuff like that.
Where did these items come from then? Because you've gathered together such an amazing range of history here.
These are from people in the area or in the region, because we're a regional museum. And they have been, like, because the museum is, like, 77 years old now, it has been collected through the years.
Yes.
This, I have to point out this gun.
It's
a large seal gun.
A giant pistol.
It belonged to the ferryman in Skagafjörður called Jón Ósmann. You can see him here, because we have, like, a big, a pretty dangerous waters here.
Yes.
So he would ferry people over, and he would have a gun to shoot the seals.
Right, not the people.
No, not the people.
I did wonder there for a minute what need a ferryman would have of a gun of that size, or a gun of any size, I suppose. Do you still welcome donations then? I know a lot of museums are more or less full. They're very glad that people want to donate items, but they have no space. Do you still welcome items if someone thinks they have something of interest?
Yes, we do have a way of collecting artifacts. We have certain things that we do collect and others that we don't. So we just have people contact us, and if it fits the criteria, we take it in, and if not, we help them to find other ways usually.
We've come to the end of the building. Which room are we entering now up the stairs?
This is the Baðstofa. The main living quarters.
Okay, so this is where a lot of sleeping would take place, because I can see six beds in this room.
Well, they would have done everything here, basically. They slept, they worked, and here on the right side, when you walk upstairs, this is where the men would sleep, and this is where the women would sleep. And then they have like these bedboards, beautifully carved, that had the purpose of keeping the bedspreads, of course, inside, but also as a table. So they would put it on their lap as they were and maybe cutting something or...
On the bed, is that a langspil?
Yes, that's a langspil.
Yeah, which is a traditional Icelandic stringed instrument that would have been played.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And like I mentioned before, someone had to take care of the entertainment while other people were working.
So someone's playing the langspil, other people are knitting a board game here.
What is it called again?
Backgammon.
Oh, it's backgammon. Yes. Simple as that, okay. This was the social centre of the building then, I suppose,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, yes. You know, people would, and the women, they sat, had the, you know, the window side because mm-hmm. they were doing more of the fine needlework.
So they needed the light?
Yes, yes, they needed the light. And the men would have been on the other with the war, maybe making some rope from horsehair and stuff like that.
I mean, there is a lot of space, but you'd need to really like the people that you lived with, because there are, you know, a lot of people would have been in that room spending a lot of time together. So you wouldn't want to fall out or argue too much with the other people in the room, would you?
No, exactly.
Nowhere to go.
Yeah. And also, of course, you know, people went between farms and then, you know, people were offered a place to stay or something like that. And then they would get news. And people, would, of course, were curious about what was going on in the... in the, you know, their area or abroad even.
Mm. We're in the north room now. Yes. And this is a machine or a device for pressing wool, I think, for taking the water out. Oh, it's for combing the wool.
Yeah, it's just so you don't have to hold both of them. So this is a clever instrument. And this is actually the room where the daughters of the priest would have stayed in. So this is, that's why they have like these enclaved bedding.
The beds, as we've said, are very small, but they're also enclosed in wooden cases.
Yeah.
So it would have felt even more sort of claustrophobic, I think, to sleep in there, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it would have been, like, warm.
It would be cosy, maybe a bit too cosy.
They would have, like, curtains as well, like, to close it up, and then it would have been more warm inside.
Yes.
And also, you know, someone would be sleeping here, so they'd step on the chest and then over here.
Yeah, so there's a third bed up there mm-hmm. with the roof very close to your head.
Yeah.
So... and another oil lamp there from the early 20th century. So this is really the social hub then of the building, as we said. I'm going to navigate my way under these steep beams into...
this is the bedroom of the priest. And
the priest's bedroom.
Yeah. And you can see that they have a nicer, you know...
they've got a bit more space, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah. And more private rather than the workers or, you know, the people who are...
And a door they can close as well.
Yeah. Yes. So this is a late 19th century addition as well. So.
And a beautiful writing desk here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to open the book, but what is it?
It's a Bible. We published a children's books it's called A Summer Day in Glumbær and A Winter Day in Glumbær. They came out in English, German and French and Icelandic, and we're adding a Polish version as well. And I actually wrote those books just here.
Okay.
I just sat down here and wrote them in Glumbær.
Could you feel the history when you were sitting at that desk writing those books?
Yes, that was the general idea. It was in the evening and I, you know, just sat by the desk and wrote them. And I in my head, they helped me out, the people who lived here in the past.
Well, trust the process.
Yeah.
Whatever works. Mm-hmm. So let's head back down these three steps.
Yeah.
At the north end of the building and make our way back through the corridor. Before we do, let's just turn right into one more room. Again with the low beams.
Yeah, this is what we called south door. I think because in the past, at some point, there probably wasn't a building here. Then this is that was just a door out for the people who lived mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. So this was added in the 19th century, this building. And this is where, you know, people who lived here, they would have walked through this door.
And there are horseshoes and various other items for looking after animals here.
Yes, this is actually like ice skates.
Those are ice skates?
Yeah.
Okay, these are two bones, maybe 10, 11, 12 centimetres long each, maybe a bit longer.
Mm.
With some rope tied round them.
Yeah.
And like that's all they are.
The people used, you know, everything off the animal.
Yeah. Did that work?
Well, it's a good question. They probably did since they made it, but it probably wasn't very comfortable, I imagine.
No, or safe.
Especially with lamb skin shoes.
Yeah, can be a few sprained ankles wearing those, I think.
Yeah, these are later versions as well.
Now, we should also, let's head back out into the... I'm going to feel the sun really hit me here after being in the...
Oh, are you okay?
Yes. What did I say would happen?
On the way out.
Managed to make it all the way through. Okay.
So this is where they would, you know, also bring out the ash, and they put it over there, and you can see like an ash mount.
So we've moved out back out into the sunshine, out of the cool insulated air of the turf house. And we should say, actually, we've concentrated our conversation on the wonderful building behind us, but that's not the only thing that goes on this site, is it?
No, we have two other buildings, 19th century timber buildings. The grey building over there, we call it Gilstova. And it used to be like a sheriff's office, if you will,
yes.
like a magistrate's office. And it was built in 1849 in Akureyri, and has been moved, this is the seventh location.
Okay.
When people moved, they packed their buildings with them.
Goodness.
Yeah, so it's traveled a lot, but we have...
And would it have been broken down and then rebuilt, or moved in one piece?
Yeah, they would have taken it down and then, you know, put numbers on it, and then put it back up like a Lego, I suppose.
Yes.
But at some point, maybe it was moved as a whole.
Yes.
In one of those seven instances. But in the past, people moved quite a lot.
Yes.
And they just, you know, dragged it on ice here in Skagafjörður. But we have exhibitions in that. In the below, we have the history of the museum, the building. And also the magistrate that, you know, made it. He was called Eggert Brím. And on the second floor, we have also about the research of our archaeological department about turf houses. Mm. So we've surveyed all turf houses in Skagafjörður, because otherwise we don't have a record of how many turf buildings we have. So we think it's very important to know how many buildings we have standing, so we can make a plan on what buildings have to be preserved. And also the yellow building, we call that Áshús. And it used to stand on Ás, which was a farm here nearby.
Yes.
And it was moved here about 30 years ago. It's from 1883. And we have a rich history of a women's society in there. So we have this exhibition about traditional costumes. Mm-hmm. And we also have a cafe in there.
And all of this can be explored?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, now you are open all year round. In the winter, it's kind of by appointment.
We are usually around, but we recommend after the 20th of October to be in touch.
Okay.
Because we open for everyone if they want to come.
Highly recommended. As I said at the start of the conversation, if you've driven past this place, turn round and come back immediately, and you'll have a wonderful day here at Glumbayr. And a link to all of that on the page accompanying the show from Ruv English Radio. My name's Darren Adam. You can get in touch anytime. We are english@ruv.is.
There is more from Ruv English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Ruv English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Ruv.